Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My hope today would be to convince the Court that my case is like Luna v. Cambria. First, and probably foremost, like Luna, our case has no state findings to which we have to defer. We have only a summary denial. So we don't really know how the state applied Strickland, whether they found there was...
I've read this record as much as I presented this in the excerpts of the record, but there's one thing I couldn't quite get a handle on. At the trial, was there actually an alibi defense presented?
No defense was presented at all, other than argument.
So, but the claim, the way it's presented in the briefs to us and to the district court, it's as though an alibi defense had been presented, but it just wasn't adequate.
No, they called no witnesses. There was argument.
So the real claim is that basically Cervantes' only possible defense, or one of the, I don't know if it's the only possible defense, but a defense that
yes.
Either he wanted to present, his lawyer didn't do it.
Exactly. The defense was available to him that he was at home asleep. Several witnesses would have placed him as home. Granted, two of them were his relatives.
I suppose, we know that from the notes of the lawyer, we know that the lawyer, as investigator, contacted the mother and the sister and learned what they were told.
Yes.
And was aware of that. Now, suppose that the lawyer thought, well, this isn't going to be credible. They're not going to be credible. And I'm not going to put on an alibi defense.
It would have been better than nothing.
Well, but let me ask
given,
you
given this evidence.
Is that a reasonable thing for a lawyer to do?
No, it's not reasonable when there isn't any other defense presented. The only thing the respondent says maybe she didn't believe them. Well, a mother's testimony is always somewhat impeachable by the fact that you're the mother.
Now, I know there are others who were allegedly there that night.
One of whom we presented a declaration.
She didn't talk to any of the...
She didn't. She talked only to the mom and sister. But we did have the declaration that from one of the ones that we found. He did talk with another witness, Tocantins investigator talked with another witness who, for some reason, they never called, who I think would have been really helpful, too, Gomez.
The claim is that Cervantes wanted to present an alibi defense.
Well,
is it that she should have recognized that there was an alibi defense and should have presented the alibi defense?
I think she should have... she knew there was an alibi defense because his mother told her.
Yeah,
the
lawyer interviewed the witnesses, right?
Yes, so she knew that the mother said that.
Did you talk to that lawyer? Do you know why the lawyer didn't present?
I have talked to the lawyer. I mean, without a subpoena and an evidentiary hearing, most lawyers won't do too much talking. I mean, I can represent to this court that I did try to talk. But unless we were never granted an evidentiary hearing in state court when we filed our...
You really don't know, if there was a reason, and if there were, what it was.
Yeah, I can't imagine a reason. But, I mean, I suppose there could conceivably have been one. I mean, maybe the mother had 20 felonies. But even so, it's still better than no defense at all, especially...
Did you ask in the district court for an evidentiary hearing?
Yes, we did. We asked in the district court and we asked in the state court. We always ask for an evidentiary hearing whenever there's a factual dispute like there is here. And, I would ask the court, at the very least, send it back for an evidentiary hearing so Ms. Binder can try to give reasons for her failure to present a defense. This is a weak case. I mean, Luna. There are really two of the witnesses that supposedly had made statements to the police recanted those statements on the stand. And one of the witnesses that counsel's investigator had interviewed, but for some reason, I don't know why it was never pursued, said that he had, in fact, come by the house earlier and had apologized. Well, the mother actually said this. The mother said that she came by the house. He came by the house. And I don't know if we even mentioned in our briefs, our Exhibit D shows the other witness who recanted at trial had also previously come by the house and said, I lied to the police initially, and I'm really sorry, and I'll make it right at trial. And why those witnesses weren't called, I don't know. Because those would have been prior consistent statements. They get on the stand, they testify, I really don't know who did it. and no, whatever I told the police was not true. And then they play the tapes that they taped interviews with the police. But if in fact these two guys had then been able to, the mother had come in and said, you know, well, they previously apologized for having lied. I mean, without regard to the alibi portion of the mother's testimony, just that portion and the sister's testimony would have been very helpful because it would have rehabilitated those witnesses. So I can't see any reason Ms. Finder would have had for not calling them. I would submit on that with that little bit of time for rebuttal, I hope.
Morning, Your Honors. The respondent has no interest in holding this petitioner if counsel is, in fact, constitutionally ineffective, meaning both deficient in his performance, her performance, and prejudicially so. But at the same time, Your Honors, I think there's a competing concern here. To allege that a defense attorney is ineffective in a multiple murder case is a very serious charge to counsel's reputation and to the system generally. And so I think it's important that we adhere very close to the record in terms of what is alleged as ineffective and what's actually established. And from the court's questions, I see we're discussing whether or not there should be a remand for an evidentiary hearing. And if I might focus on that for a minute, I would suggest that there's a difference between the need for remand and the threshold showing made by petitioner that would warrant an evidentiary hearing. And before we can really apply Strickland, we have to be sure that there's no possible reasonable explanation for counsel's conduct. Otherwise, the presumption, I believe, is with the respondent.
Well, we're just surmising, aren't we?
We are surmising, but I...
In fact, the magistrate, if I'm not mistaken, in the magistrate's report and recommendation, she basically kind of surmised.
Absolutely. But I think that speaks to the issue of who has the burden of persuasion on the ineffectiveness claim.
Well, he asked for a hearing in state court. Or he didn't ask for a hearing in state court because he did ask for a hearing in state court in this case.
Absolutely. But
it was denied.
Yes. But, Your Honor, the reason it was denied, I might submit, is that if petitioner doesn't get to the threshold of the need for an evidentiary hearing, there's no need to grant one. And what's missing from the showing here
is... Well, the Supreme Court rarely grants an evidentiary hearing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. How many evidentiary hearings have been granted?
I'm sorry. I thought the court was referring to the district court.
Well, I started off with the state court because, there's a little bit of... You're supposed to ask the state... You're supposed to try and get a hearing in the state court, if it's possible.
How many hearings did the state court grant on the... these habeas petitions?
Your Honor, don't know the number. I would allow that proportionately very few. More so in the district court, though. We do see them there. And I think the reason it was appropriate not to have one here is that...
Maybe more in the district court.
Proportionately more, I think, are held in the district court compared to the highest state court.
Well, we did a lot of these. I've been making this speech for a long time, but nobody listens. The reason that we, I think, that we get these state habeas petitions is because the state court isn't doing its job. You see, they just put these little postcards on, and then it comes to us, and we don't have any postcards. We've got to go through this whole process, and because of that, we have a large cadre of magistrates that go through all these things, go through all those records and all that. So it's kind of like full employment up here, but we're doing your job. And I remember one time I checked the district court downtown. Oh, they get maybe 3,000 habeas petitions. And how many were granted? One. Then Ethel Younger would run around screaming all around town, look what the feds are doing to us, you know, they're interfering with us. So that's why we have these. And I think if the state court system, and I was a superior court judge and a municipal court judge, and I think if they're a little more caretaken, that we wouldn't get all this business.
Your Honor, I completely acknowledge what the court is saying. And the only thing I might offer is that there is an intermediate level between this court and Cal Supreme, and the district court did have the ability to hold the hearing. I would submit to the court that the reason it didn't was because there wasn't an adequate showing under Strickland to warrant the hearing.
What in your view is deficient in terms of the showing required for an evidentiary hearing, the threshold showing?
I think, Your Honor, what was needed was a recognition by the district court that there was no other possible way for counsel to have handled this case, that there could be no conceivable reason why these witnesses were called. I think that while that's a fair issue, it's petitioner's burden to make the showing. And all that's been
said, you see, she tried to talk to, I mean, the only one who can tell us that is, I think, the lawyer, trial counsel. And counsel, you know, represented, she tried to talk to her, and, you know, without a subpoena. And I'm not surprised because, you know, there is this problem about attorney-client privilege in the waiver. And how is the petitioner supposed to make that showing if you can't have an evidentiary hearing?
Well, with all respect, Your Honor, the counsel's declaration says that she sent trial counsel a letter asking for a copy of the file. And that the file was provided. There's no indication in this declaration that trial counsel was sought or that her opinion was asked. Sometimes we see letters in the court file saying, counsel, will you please tell us why you did what you did? The answer, I think, Your Honor, to the question of why not just call these witnesses are twofold, and granted I'm speculating, but The problem is to meet the Strickland test, there has to be no conceivable reason for counsel's conduct. Otherwise, it fails. And if I might suggest, too,
The Strickland test is not a test on whether you're entitled to an evidentiary hearing. Strickland test is whether you're entitled to relief or ineffective assistance.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I think, you know, most of the questions that seem to come from the panel here is, well, why isn't this showing sufficient to entitle the petitioner to an evidentiary hearing?
Well, I think, Your Honor, there are understandable reasons for counsel's conduct. I think the reason...
We're all ears.
Thanks, Joe. Defense counsel was facing a street gang enhancement, which under California law... subjects the defendant to imprisonment for life without the possibility of parole for many years. It may be...
Wasn't he facing that anyway?
Well, as to the first-degree murder count, that's correct, Your Honor. But you know, on that point, I believe we're only here on the issue of count two and the subsequent counts. The count one murder of Sevilla is not contested in terms of ineffectiveness. And so... if we look at it that way, the 25 years to life on count one may be before us in any event. But facing the street gang enhancement as she was, counsel may have decided that we've heard enough from gang witnesses in this case. I don't agree that there was no defense presented. I would grant that no alibi defense was presented, but it's...
Well, that's what the petition's all about, is an alibi defense.
Right, but we haven't heard from... well. I think the defense, based on the cross-examination of the gang witnesses who did testify, was that a murder happened, but petitioner wasn't there, and I don't know anything about it. It's a little different from saying, I was home sleeping, I know where he was. The other reason that counsel may have been in a difficult position might be this. Counsel did interview the sister and the mother. We know this from the file. Suppose petitioner said to trial counsel, you know, I've got people who will say that I was home sleeping. I've got my family friend, Jose Hernandez. I've got my mother. I've got my sister. But it's not true. I'm just saying this to save my neck. At that point, counsel's in a very difficult position. ethically, she can't put her client on the stand or the witnesses.
We're just speculating.
We are, Your Honor. I would grant that.
The state court could have had a hearing on this. Maybe it had taken 2 hours, huh? And made its ruling. We'd have a record. And so we don't do that. It ends up, we spend a lot of time. We have to go through all these files. Magistrates go through them. District judges go through them. Your office goes through them. So I bet if you add it all up, it's a lot more than 2 or 3 hours, probably 100 hours, maybe more.
I agree that it does take a lot of time, Your Honor. But I think the specific allegations of counsel are not so demonstrably ineffective that an evidentiary hearing is warranted.
Well, there was an alibi, you know. And, I had a case recently where the same thing came up, and there was an effective assistance of counsel.
Well,
the murder case, and we granted the writ. And you know what happened? State dropped the charges.
Well, Luna was a similar case. I agree with counsel there, but I think the difference is that in that, and Judge Tashima was actually on that panel, but the state in that case conceded deficient performance. And as the district court found, it was a much weaker case for guilt.
Well, you know, what you just said about the, Mr. Senator, about the what was presented at trial, it actually sharpens things for me a little bit, which was that there was testimony, apparently, that he wasn't there.
By implication. That the witnesses who had given incriminatory reports to the police were called by the prosecution. And they recanted to the effect of saying, never saw him, never said it, barely know him. And that was pretty much
so the if his mother and sister had testified, and somebody else had testified, yeah, at the time he was home asleep.
Well,
wouldn't that be consistent with that and provide, plausible alibi defense?
Wouldn't be inconsistent, but there, you know, our jurisprudence says so much that we need to defer to counsel's judgment, absent showing of some deficient performance, and that it's prejudicial. I think feel differently, Your Honors, if these were witnesses who were not known to counsel. But the fact is, counsel was present when the investigator interviewed the mother and sister. She was present when the names were revealed, and the declaration we have doesn't say that these witnesses weren't contacted or weren't interviewed. All Mr. Hernandez says is that I was available and willing to testify during the trial, but not asked to. He doesn't say that I wasn't interviewed or even subpoenaed. And so there are unquestionably some mysteries about this case, but what I would propose to the court is that the burden is on petitioner to...
Here's one of the mysteries to me. This is on page 21 of the magistrate judge's report and recommendation. I guess page 27 in excerpt, but page 21 of the R&R, the paragraph starting on line 9 says, because the record establishes that counsel interviewed the mother and sister, and there is evidence that suggests counsel had good reason for not calling them as witnesses. Where is that evidence? What is the evidence? There is evidence that suggests that counsel had good reason for not calling them.
Your Honor, I took that to mean that it's contradictory with Jose Hernandez's testimony or proposed testimony. I think that's what the district court was referring to. That the mother's and sister's story was in conflict with what Hernandez now says he would have testified to on the issue of how petitioner was discovered allegedly, what noise was heard, where the discovery took place. But
on the page before, the court says, the magistrate judge, the court therefore presumes that trial counsel made an informed decision and then converts that decision into evidence and then the evidence into a finding. So it's all based on a presumption, isn't it?
Well, I think at that point it is, Your Honor, but later in the R&R, the magistrate judge appears to contrast the petitioner's sister's and mother's testimony with
Hernandez?
With what was proposed by Hernandez. And that's what I understood the reference to be. I think, Your Honor, on the issue, just to close, of whether an evidentiary hearing was required, I think the reason the district court declined to have one was because the threshold for showing ineffectiveness, or even suggesting it, wasn't met, given who the witnesses were and the absence of a propoundment that these witnesses truly were interviewed.
I don't recall her addressing the need, whether for an evidentiary hearing or whether there was no need for an evidentiary hearing.
The magistrate judge, Your Honor? She didn't directly. I think it was certainly before the court in petitioner's request.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Your Honor.
Just briefly, Ars, I hope there isn't anything deficient in my personal declaration that would deny my client a hearing, because that certainly was not my intention. It's incredibly difficult to reconstruct these cases a long time later and try to do what trial counsel perhaps should have done. And absent an evidentiary hearing, it's very hard for us to we have no subpoena power at the state or federal level, really, or no way to really conduct discovery. And my understanding,
you can go in under the federal rules for habeas proceedings under 2254 and ask for discovery. You can ask for it to take a deposition. You can ask, there's all kinds of things you can do. And you can ask for an evidentiary hearing. Just put them on.
We did ask for the evidentiary hearing. We did not make any discovery. We did make efforts on our own to try to find some of these people, and we did find Mr. Hernandez. And if Mr. Hernandez was inconsistent with the mother, which I don't really think he was, though he'd been drinking and might not have had the same memory as the mother who hadn't been drinking, she didn't put an Hernandez on either, so it wasn't a question of her making the choice because they were inconsistent. And my understanding in California, and interpretation of Strickland and People v. Pope, the no conceivable explanation is the standard on appeal, but on habeas, where, you have an opportunity to inquire into the reason, counsel can give reasons. And I have had habeas petitions where opposing counsel has also got a hold of the state counsel, and they've given declarations that really hurt me. So in this case, I really hope that the absence of a declaration from counsel I really hope that the court will consider letting us have our evidentiary hearing.
Well, thanks. The matter will stand submitted. Now we come to